Graham Hancock and Robert Bovall. From Manhattan, New York City, with concerns and information, Richard Hoagland. Old friends. New information. New concerns. Coming up in a moment. We just spent an hour with Zachariah Sitchin. If you missed it, sorry. We're going to be dealing tonight with information about the pyramids, Giza, the Sphinx. And so before we get started this morning, I have a very relevant announcement. Next October 1st, we go on a cruise, another cruise. This is a wing dinger. We leave the U.S. for Athens, Greece, October 1st. I call it Arts Terror Tour, Cruise 97. That's a joke, really, or not so much. It's for those who like living life. Athens, Greece. We board the Mazdan, the most luxurious ship that I know of that sails the sea. And our first stop is Alexandria and Cairo for the pyramids, for Giza. You'll be able to descend 100 steps into the center of Cheops, the largest of 3 5,000-year-old pyramids. You may also visit the interiors of the other two pyramids, just off to the side, the famed Sphinx. We're going. If you want to come along, I'm going to tell you how. Run and get a pencil now. Also included on this cruise, Jerusalem. That should be interesting. Haifa, Israel. The Greek islands, including Rhodes, Patmos, Crete, and one more that I haven't yet learned how to pronounce. Then it's on to Naples, Italy. There we'll visit Pompeii, a place I've always wanted to visit, buried in 79 A.D. We'll get to see Vesuvius. Then the Isle of Capri. And then back to Rome, Italy. All of this will take about 2 weeks, 12 days, 13 days, something like that. If you would like to come with us, it is the trip of a lifetime. Now listen to me carefully. You can call one of the following telephone numbers on Sunday, beginning on Sunday. You cannot call on Saturday. They're going to be closed Saturday. But Sunday or Monday, you can call one of the following numbers and book with us. Book early, and you save a lot of money. We've really got a good deal on this cruise. It's going to be spectacular. So here they are. If you're in the eastern part of the U.S., and you want information on this incredible 97 tour, please call 800-624-7779. That's 800-624-7779. If you're in the Midwest, call 1-800-633-2732. That's 800-633-2732. And if you're on the West Coast, to include Alaska and Hawaii, call 800-848-7120. That's 800-848-7120. You can call Sunday beginning at 9 o'clock or Monday beginning at 8 o'clock in the morning. Don't wait. We are already booking like crazy, as you might imagine. We are going to take another tour, but I turned all that around, changed it, and we are taking this one, and it is going to be incredible. Now, in a moment, as I said, Graham Hancock, Robert Bovall, and Richard Hoagland, and some night ahead. Next installment coming up later today.
Okay. You want to know the truth? Not the lies the government's been feeding him. I know this is going to sound crazy, but look, I said too much. Who knows who's listening in? We need to talk. All right, we're on the secured line. Now, 50 years ago, a UFO crashed in the desert in New Mexico. And since that day, every major moment in human history has been influenced. That sounds crazy. Look around you. They're walking among us everywhere. Call them aliens. Call them anything you like. Just don't ignore this warning. On Saturday, September 21st, NBC will expose the world to the truth with its new series, Dark Skies. I know you think it's just a TV show, but it's the only way to get the word out. The government tried to suppress this, but on Saturday, September 21st, NBC opens this top-secret file on Dark Skies. It's the truth. The skies is a television program. Okay, that's Dark Skies. Saturday, September 21st, NBC. Oh, yeah, there's one more thing. Hey, I thought this was a secure...
You know, people often tell us they've missed all or part of a particularly interesting Art Bell interview. Well, here's the solution. Simply order a cassette tape of the interview. Chancellor Broadcasting Company has a huge selection of Art's interviews available by calling this toll-free number, 1-800-917-4278. Now, the interviews vary in length and are priced accordingly. For example, the two-hour interview with Marshall Barnes concerning the Philadelphia experiment is $14.50. The Randolph Winters interview about UFOs is a three-hour tape that's priced at $20.50, including postage. Other tapes in the catalog include Daniel Brinkley, Edgar Mitchell, Richard Hoagland, and many, many others. That order number again, 1-800-917-4278. Call anytime, 24 hours a day. 1-800-917-4278. All your favorite Art Bell interviews are available. Why not add one or more to your collection? Call right now.
Going to the state of Delaware, where Graham Hancock and Robert Bouval are located. Gentlemen, are you there?
Yes, we're here. Yeah, we're here.
Very good. Very good. I can hear you both just fine. You're going to have to stay close to those phones.
Okay.
All right. Welcome to the United States once again, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thanks.
There is a great, great controversy underway. In December, there is a plan to open the chambers of the Sphinx. And I know that you are less than fully pleased, the both of you, with the manner in which it is going to be opened and those who will do the opening. Is that an accurate assessment?
Well, let me be precise on this. This is Robert Bouval here speaking.
Yes.
What we are not pleased about is the attitude of the Director General of the Giza Plateau, Dr. Zahi Hawass. Our conflict is with this man, who for the last 20 years has been playing a game of duplicity on this necropolis, the Giza necropolis, and that's what we're not pleased about. We're getting a lot of conflicting information coming out of this necropolis, a lot of paradox statements, and we really don't know what's going on. So we're not pleased about the public being deprived of information that we feel is legitimately theirs to know.
All right. What I would like to do is to bring Richard Hoagland on, because he has some information for you, and I'm going to do that in a moment. Is it true that because of the conflict that's been going on, that the two of you were asked to leave Giza?
I've just returned from Giza, Art, and what you just said is putting it mildly. I was there to give an interview to a television channel from South Africa, and when Dr. Zahi Hawass heard that I was there being interviewed on location, Giza is following words. He said that he would very much like to know where I am so he could cut my head off, throw me in a pit, and have all the Egyptians defecate on my person. Now, I'm totally stunned by this kind of statement. So what you just said is very mild. Yes, we were thrown out in verbally at this stage, and it looks like he intends to do it physically.
We've been subjected to all manner of abuse, personal threats, legal threats by parties involved in this matter. And all that Robert and I are trying to do is keep the public fully informed as best as we can about what is happening at Giza, and we're just astonished by the reactions of senior personalities involved in this affair, and we fear for the truth in this matter.
All right. Before I bring Richard on, which I'm going to do here shortly, let us discuss what is at stake. There may be people in the audience, a very large audience this morning, who don't understand what is at stake, what may be within, what do you believe is maybe inside these chambers?
What is at stake is the truth about the past of mankind. What are we as a species? What is our civilization? Why are we alive? What is the meaning of life? These are the mysteries that Giza offers us a possible answer to. It's Graham Hancock speaking. I've been convinced for a very long time that we're a species with amnesia, that we've forgotten an extraordinarily important episode in our own past. I'm sure many of the listeners are familiar with the arguments that I put forward in Fingerprints of the Gods about a lost civilization destroyed in a cataclysm, and of how there were survivors, and of how those survivors settled at Giza a very long time ago and tried desperately to pass down to the future the truth that they knew. Robert and I have followed the evidence, having followed the clues in very close and careful detail, which we have published in our book, The Pitch of the Sphinx, have concluded that there is a great secret concealed at Giza, and we think that that secret may contain the key to the mystery of human life. What's at stake could not be higher. This is a matter of the utmost importance. These monuments are a legacy of the whole of mankind. They belong to the entire world, and we're deeply disturbed about the manner in which they appear to be being monopolized and in which the truth is being manipulated concerning these monuments.
Are you basically in agreement, do you think, with Zachariah Sitchin, who also believes that, he believes that the monuments at Giza were built as an ancient spaceport? Have you heard this, and do you agree with that?
Well, we're very familiar with Zachariah Sitchin's work. Zach is a friend, and we've met on several occasions and discussed these matters. I'm not so sure whether we need to go to those great conclusions yet. I think the best thing for us to do is follow the clues and see where they lead us. And at this stage, they're leading us to understand that the Giza Necropolis is a time marker of a remote date, way beyond the chronological accepted date of Egyptology. We have established a date of 10,500 BC. I think that Zach does agree with this date.
Yes, he does.
What we've established through our investigation, basically what we've done, Art, is to use the three components of Giza. One is the architecture of the monuments. Two is the ancient text related to these monuments. And three is the astronomy. We have absolutely no doubt that the ancients spoke in a sort of astronomical language. And when we've integrated those three components, we are breaking into a coded message. And that coded message is telling us that there is a legacy hidden there, put there, at a time that the Egyptians considered to be the Genesis. And that whatever it is there, we hope records of a system of knowledge, was put either under the Sphinx or within the Great Pyramid. So that's where, so far, the investigation has led us. Zach has chosen to make conclusions that, seen from our point of view, are going beyond the evidence available. But I think that Zach has raised some very important
And he's a wonderful researcher, and he's done marvelous research work, which everybody should pay tribute to. I think that Robert and I are trying to come at this from a position of the evidence and not leap rapidly to conclusions about what may be the source of this knowledge. What is clear to us is that the Egyptological explanation, the explanation that everybody reads in their encyclopedias and in their school textbooks about these monuments, is totally and utterly wrong, and what is desperately needed is much more research into this matter.
And this is where we are in total parallel with Zach. I mean, he stands for the same vision of what Giza is, and he certainly agrees with us that the Orthodox interpretation cannot stand anymore.
Do you believe, I'm trying to set up some basis for a conversation that has come, do you believe that mankind is ready for the information that may be realized assuming the information could be retrieved intact, are we now ready to receive the information that is in there?
Yeah, we're all adults here. We're not children. Of course we're ready for the information. And anybody who says that mankind is not ready for the information certainly is not speaking for me or anybody else I know on this planet. We all are in need of information about ourselves, and anybody who keeps that information from us is doing us a disservice.
It is your firm belief, I take it.
I think that what we have here is a very, very clever device designed by what we're referring to as an unknown source at this stage. And if it wasn't meant to be found now, we won't find it.
We couldn't find it.
I think what it boils down to is that it's designed to be found when the time is right. And it looks like the time is right because we're getting close to finding it.
Certain pre-qualifying tests were put in place by the creators of this extraordinary site, and we seem to be getting to the stage as a species where we're passing those tests. We've reached the gate. We need to open the gate and go through it.
Then you obviously have concerns that about the gatekeepers, about those who are going to open. What do you believe is wrong with what's coming up, with the manner and the people that are going to try to go in December, I believe it is, and retrieve this information, the people that would throw you in the pit and defecate upon you?
Well, if you know that that somebody is going to go in there in December, we would certainly like to hear more about it, because the last official word from Dr. Zahi Hawass, the chief inspector of the Giza Plateau, is that he has canceled the project of Florida State University, which was financed by the Shaw Foundation, and which, as far as we are aware, is the only project that was given a license this year for opening chambers under the Sphinx.
Oh, my. When did you receive that information?
This information was given by Zahi Hawass in an interview to a television network from South Africa last week. I was there. So there is no question about the cancellation of the Florida State license backed by the Joseph Shaw Foundation. So what you're telling us is total news to us, and we're very, very keen to know who is going to be opening this these chambers in December. Presumably, Richard Holden has some information.
Yes, and that's coming up shortly. I want to do that after the break because we're going to need clear airtime for what I see coming. What if that is canceled, then I presume that pleases you?
Well, I think we ought to make this clear to everybody is that we don't have a fight with the Florida State University nor with Dr. Joseph Shaw. Our involvement in this matter stems from our interest to investigate the meaning of Giza. We were not interested in all these politics that's going on there, but we stumbled on this situation, and we felt it our duty to bring this out to the public. I mean, our own effort is to ensure that all knowledge coming out of Giza reaches the public. For the last 4 years, there's been a situation that we have stumbled upon that has led us to believe that information is not passing properly to the public. There's been a huge situation cover-up concerning, for example, a door found inside a pyramid. I've been directly involved with this matter for the last 4 years, and similarly with the affair concerning chambers under the Sphinx. So we really don't have a fight with individuals who are trying to find a legacy there. We have a fight with the man who is in fact preventing this, Dr. Zahi Hawass. So I think it's important everybody understands this.
What is the fight? I mean, why would he want your heads cut off and thrown into a pit and so forth and so on? Why?
We're completely nonplussed by this because we would have thought that the Egyptian government and Dr. Hawass and all Egyptologists, the entire Egyptological profession is quite well aware of what is going on there, would have also wanted the public to be fully informed about what is happening. But there seems to be a tremendous desire for the public not to know about what is happening. There seems to be a culture of secrecy surrounding this monument, and we regard it as extremely unhealthy and unwise, as a matter of fact, for the future of the human race.
Do you think the publicity that you created about the December opening on this program, and I presume elsewhere, is the reason for the cancellation?
I wouldn't want to speculate about that too much. I think that the public voice has been heard by the Egyptian authorities. It's quite clear that the response of the Egyptian authorities in the cancellation of this project, and we can only take Dr. Hawass at his word when he says in an official interview that he has cancelled this project, is a response to the concerns that have been expressed by the public. And if we've managed to bring this information to the public, then we're glad that that has been the result.
So then if there is a cancellation, in all likelihood, you can take credit or blame. At least he views it that way.
We don't want to take credit or blame, and we do want the chamber under the Sphinx to be open. Indeed, it's very probable that there is more than one chamber there. But you think that the manner in which the project that we've now been told has, the project that has recently been cancelled, we think that the nature of that project was extremely bad and unfortunate and should never have happened in the first place.
We want to make this absolutely clear as well. We have reported what we know is going on there. We've reported the facts.
Yes.
If those facts have led to the situation that has developed, and if those facts induced the Egyptian authorities to stop the work that is going on there, then let it be so.
We are merely
reporting what is going on there, and we believe that this is what should have been done. Now,
all right, I'll hold it.
This is the CBC Radio Network. This is CBC.
I'm kind of glad that I don't know what Coast to Coast AM is going to be about. That's up to you. Unless we've got a guest, it's open line, it's almost radio anarchy, and it's a blast, and it's right here. Coming up this week on Dreamland, Dr. Brian O'Leary. He's an astronaut. He's author of Miracle in the Void. He's an astronaut, but he will speak to the spiritual side of what's going on out there. He's a guy who knows. He's one of the ones who could have been there. Dr. Brian O'Leary, astronaut, author of Miracle in the Void, this week on Dreamland.
CBC.
Coming up in a moment, Graham Hancock, Robert Bovall from Delaware, and from Manhattan, Richard Hoagland with some new information. I'm going to turn over the airwaves now to Graham and Robert Bovall, who are here from Delaware, and now on the air also from Manhattan, Richard Hoagland. Gentlemen, you're all on the air together.
Hello, Graham.
Robert.
Hello, yes, we're here.
How are you?
Hi, Richard.
How are you?
I'm glad you made it safely back from Cairo with your head intact. I left messages on your machine. I was getting concerned.
We've both been traveling.
We've both been traveling, and, well, you probably heard the first part of this interview, Richard. And,
yes, I did,
You can see that Dr. Hawass is getting rather hot on this necropolis.
Well, I think it's because we're all closing in, and I think that there is a plot, and I don't think that we should be indicting, you know, potential members of the plot without really good evidence. But some of the things, some of the most outrageous things that you've been reporting are indications that we're getting close. And when
you're right, Richard, and I know you've been talking to Dr. Shaw and Boris Said and members of the new team. Now, we're a bit confused. Is this like, I mean, we've heard from Dr. Hawass through the interview that he gave to a South African radio station in July and recently, last week, to a television station, Carte Blanche program, that he has cancelled the license of the Florida State. Apparently, when he found out that it was backed by Joe Shaw, which we find is absolutely hilarious, since he has been involved with Shaw and the team.
He claims to have found problems in their scientific approach to the work, as indeed Robert and I have been trying to draw attention to for some time.
So what's the status of this license, as far as you understand it?
As far as I understand, everything that Dr. Hawass is saying is not accurate. And I have talked with Joe Shore, I have talked with Boris several times this evening. I had dinner with him in the last 3 or 4 days. I left messages on your machine, Robert.
Let me just get this right. Are you saying that the chief inspector of antiquities for the pyramids and the Sphinx is making inaccurate statements about the pyramids and the Sphinx?
In terms of my knowledge, Dr. Hawass's statements are not accurate.
Are you saying that Joseph Shore and Boris Said know more about what is happening at the pyramids and the Sphinx than the chief Egyptian official responsible for those monuments?
What I'm saying, and I want to be very careful, Graham, is that I have not talked personally to Dr. Hawass.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Richard.
I have not heard directly from him.
Can you tell us what have you heard from Dr. Shore and the latest that you've heard from Dr. Shore and Boris Said concerning this project?
Well, this is why I left messages on your machine, Robert.
Richard, I've been away traveling.
I totally understand. All right. Yeah. But I have tried to keep, you know,
Tell our listeners what these messages are. I mean,
I'm going to try to do that, all right? My role in this is a very curious role because, as you know, I have been pursuing potentially ancient artifacts on other planets, starting with Mars and then moving on to our lunar investigation. And very early on in the Mars work, you know, 10, 12 years ago, it became apparent that there was a potential connection between what we have at Cydonia on Mars and what lies at Giza here on Earth. And I have spent a lot of time talking with a number of colleagues and looking at an awful lot of literature in an effort to pin down if there in fact is some bona fide, testable, verifiable connection between these two sites. Mm-hmm. I gave a presentation at the UN where I laid out some of the evidence. I have provided you with some of this new evidence that we have developed.
Yes, we shared conferences in London and Leeds recently.
That's correct.
And we're very, very aware of this and we do very much have developed an interest in this, as you know.
Well, for the benefit of our audience, you know, remember we're talking to America tonight, so we have to make sure that everyone is up on the same curve here.
Yeah, go on, Rich.
So my interest has been very long-standing. And I have tried with, you know, the tools at my disposal to develop facts that would either, you know, verify or falsify the hypothesis that there's a rather remarkable connection between whatever's at Giza, and I totally agree that it's pivotal and intriguing and important and extraordinarily ancient and very exciting to things that are going to happen, and what lies on Mars. It has only been relatively recently that I find myself, in part because of our friendship, Graham, and then meeting you, Robert, and ultimately, you know, meeting Shore and even earlier than meeting all of you guys, you know, knowing John West and of his interest and Dr. Schock and, you know, the connection between the redating of the Sphinx and those possible connections that I was looking for, that I got myself embroiled in the middle of what some might think of as a food fight. Because as you get deeper into this, what you find is there is a mystery, there is a truth, and then there are all these terrestrial politics that tend to swirl around the Middle East. We're seeing this playing out on CNN right now in terms of Israel and the opening of archaeological, you know, tombs and tunnels there.
May I break in for just 1 second? I wanted to get to that, so let's stop for just 1 second. The Israelis indeed say they're widening the tunnel to allow more tourists in. A lot of people are faxing me right now and saying what they're really doing is opening a side tunnel which they believe leads directly under the Mosque of Omar and may lead to the old Temple of Solomon, one of the reported resting places of the Lost Ark. Does everybody agree or disagree with that?
Well, it is indeed the case that one of the reported resting places of the Lost Ark of the Covenant is under the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. As again, many of your listeners may know, in an earlier book, The Sign and the Seal, I presented a great deal of evidence which suggests that that may not be the final resting place of the Lost Ark. Ethiopia seems to me a much more likely proposition, but there's no dispute that the Temple Mount in Jerusalem is one of the supposed resting places of the Lost Ark.
All right, well, that being said, could this, in your opinion, instead of being a helpful little item to get more tourists in, could it be an archaeological dig?
I don't actually want to express a view on that because I'm not studying the Temple Mount at the moment. I'm working, and Robert is working very closely on the issue of the Great Pyramids and
yes.
the Great Sphinx of Egypt, and we feel that these monuments require our full attention at
All right.
the moment.
All right, I just
Art,
wanted
the
to...
The reason I brought it up is because I see, you know, from a distance of 6,000 miles, an important parallel politically. And that is
right, Richard.
Archaeology in the Middle East, which is the cradle of human civilization, home to the oldest known civilizations of this epoch, seems to be an extremely sensitive hot button issue for an awful lot of people, both at the common level, the general level of the population, and as you rise up through the ranks and get to more and more inside people in positions of authority and influence in government and in, religious institutions and in other institutions, you find extreme sensitivity regarding things that one wouldn't normally think would be that sensitive. I mean, after all, the past is dead and buried, it's dusty, it's ancient, it's not relevant, at least that's the perception. In fact, I think it's exactly the opposite. The past is extraordinarily relevant to the future and to
And
that's why, for people who don't understand why there's an awful lot of dead human beings in the Middle East tonight in Israel over what looks to be a rather silly argument over a tunnel, in fact, that has come to an extreme case. The threats against Robert and Graham that are being voiced out of Egypt are a few steps behind, but my perception is that the sensitivities are very similar, and that raises in me the political question, how close are we to something pivotally important at Giza? And I fully share Graham and Robert's apprehensions that there is some ulterior motive, and I would hold out as evidence of ulterior motives and agendas of disinformation the fact that we now have on the table two totally opposite perspectives. One is that the Shore Foundation expedition to Giza, to which I've been invited to participate and be present at the opening, has been canceled. And the other, from Dr. Shore himself and his representatives as of a couple of days ago, is when they returned from their recent trip to Egypt, which Robert was in the last 72 hours, they told me personally that everything is on track and we should be, you know, getting our airplane tickets so we can arrive there.
Well, it's clear that both of these parties cannot be correct. One of them
exactly.
must be wrong.
Precisely, and that's why I wanted you to know.
May I come in a bit here? I mean, you know that we believe that there is an important legacy that is lying at Giza, and that at this stage we reserve our opinion as to who put it there, but we certainly believe that it's been put there in very, very ancient times, and it is something that would be extremely important for us to retrieve.
We are all in agreement on that, yes.
I know what you stand for, Richard, which I fully side by you, is that information concerning us, the human race, is something that we all should share, and that I've been fighting for years on issues such as Giza, where information is being dished out and interpreted by people who consider themselves to be in the know, and the public isn't getting a fair deal out of it. Now, that is what is at stake here, and I need to hear this a bit more clearly. Am I getting this right, that there has been an actual chamber detected by the Shore team in recent months?
And can I just supplement that question, Richard? The facts that Art just read out on the air were the facts to you from Boris Said. Now, Boris Said is a filmmaker who was making a film for Joseph Shaw. Are you telling us that Boris Said is speaking officially for Joseph Shaw and the Shaw Foundation in this fact?
Joe Shaw, when I met him in New York several weeks ago, we had a five-hour extended meeting, Dr. Shaw and I, and a representative of the Canadian government. During that meeting, Dr. Shaw tendered me a provisional invitation, and I understand tonight that Boris's fax is a confirmation of that invitation and the specific dates as part of an ongoing discussion that I've kept you apprised of every step of the way.
The American public should know Mr. Shaw is the money behind this proposed expedition and opening, correct?
That's correct.
All right.
He is a chemist by profession. He runs a foundation, and he has contributed very generously, apparently, to investigations being spearheaded by archaeologists out of Florida State University. At least that's how I understand the technical institutional protocols are working.
Well, I think for the benefit of the listeners, Richard, perhaps you should give the background as to how we got involved with Dr. Shaw in this matter. What I'd like to explain is that in the middle part of 1994, John Anthony West, who at that time had been barred for any further research at Giza, along with Robert Schock, as you know, asked
Robert Schock, to clarify for the audience, is the professor of geology at the University of Boston, whose work on the age of the Sphinx has received wide publicity.
Now, what happened is that John Anthony West suggested that we should meet up with Dr. Joseph Shaw, whom we didn't know at the time, and one of his colleagues, Dr. Joseph Jehoda, who had been working at Giza on and off for the last 20 years, and meet up with them at the Edgar Cayce Foundation. That meeting took place in May 1994. The reason the meeting took place is that Dr. Shaw and the president of the Cayce Foundation, Charles Thomas Cayce, were very interested in the astronomical investigation that we were conducting on the Giza, at Giza, and mainly because we had arrived at concluding that the Giza necropolis harked back to a date of 10,500 BC, which, as you know, concorded with the Cayce prophecy. Now, at that meeting, we were specifically told by Dr. Shaw that he was very keen to vindicate the Cayce prophecies. He's a Cayce member.
He's a life member of the Cayce Foundation, and he said to us in writing that he wanted to do anything that would corroborate the Cayce prophecies.
And that's the basis of our collaboration initially with Dr. Shaw. I mean, we regarded ourselves as good friends, and he asked us to participate in his aspirations to vindicate the Cayce prophecy.
One of the things that puzzles us is that Zahi Hawass has stated on public record that Cayce is a pretender and that his statements and prophecies have no merit whatsoever.
That's how we got linked to Joseph Shaw and his wishes at the time to look for evidence to vindicate the Cayce prophecies, which ultimately comes down to finding the Hall of Records. Now, what happened since is that Dr. Shaw has put an application in September 95 with the Florida State University to conduct seismographic work at the Giza Plateau. We still had assumed at this time that everything was fine between us, that his intentions were still the same. And when that license was granted to the Shaw Foundation, the Florida State University, in March of this year, all we wanted to do was to report all the information to the public to ensure that the public would be kept informed, fully informed of what was going on there. What came as a tremendous surprise to us is two things. One is that the team that included Boris Said, Thomas Babeki, the seismographer from Florida, and Joseph Jehoda were all members of the earlier team that had been led by John Anthony West and Robert Schock. In short, what we had there, seemingly to us,
was a team minus John West and Robert Schock. We were a bit puzzled, and we expressed our desire to see the original investigators included in this project. And we were told in no uncertain terms that not only would they not be included, that if we carried on our involvement with John Anthony West, we would be ourselves excluded from participating in this project. We were obliged to take position here, and we said that, well, in that case, we'd stay neutral. We cannot possibly drop our friendship and support for John Anthony West.
Also, that our obligation is to the public to report these matters, which we proceeded to do in the Daily Mail newspaper in London, at which point we were threatened with a libel action by Dr. Joseph Shaw. So we're very puzzled as to what's actually going on.
Graham, let me jump in and ask, what was the problem with West?
We have absolutely no idea what is the problem with West. The general public owes West a great debt of gratitude over this matter because he's been a lone voice crying in the wilderness over the age of the Sphinx and the possibility of a great hidden legacy beneath the Sphinx.
The problem with West, Art, is again Dr. Zahi Hawass. When John West and Robert Schock were conducting investigations at the Sphinx concerning the weathering and age of the Sphinx, and when they did find through the work of Thomas Dubecki, through the seismographic work of Thomas Dubecki, a possible chamber underneath the poles of the Sphinx, they were very rudely stopped and thrown out of the site in the same manner that we were. Dr. Sanya Weiss has accused them of being unscientific. For Christ's sake, we were dealing here with a senior Boston geologist with all the credentials necessary for such an exploration. To call such a man unscientific is beyond my understanding. And
he also accused Boris Said and John West of some sort of quote-unquote Zionist plot.
So that's the problem. And may I say that they are not the only people being thrown out of this necropolis. There is a very, very important situation that has developed with a German robotics engineer. Rudolf Gantebrick, as your listeners may know, discovered at the end of a long, narrow tunnel inside the Great Pyramid a door, which, to my knowledge, has yet to be opened. When this door was discovered in the early part of 1993, the same thing happened. Rudolf Gantebrick was thrown off the site, accused of being unscientific, specifically accused for wanting to pass the information to the public. I was involved with this affair myself.
All right, we're going to have to break here. We're at the top of the hour. So in other words, every time somebody gets close, they get booted out of the Giza area. Stand by, gentlemen.
This is the CBC Radio Network.
Stay tuned for more of this encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell, coming up after the news on most of these CBC stations.
From Speaker to Bruce Williams, the best talk lineup in the Tri-Counties is right here on WWSC Glens Falls.
USA Radio Network News, this is Jason Walker. The White House taking steps.
Taking calls on the wild card line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
Here again, I am. My guests are Graham Hancock, Robert Bavall, and Richard Hoagland. The subject is the Sphinx, Giza, in Egypt. Robert Bavall and Graham Hancock were without ceremony booted off Giza recently. They believe the opening of the Sphinx has been canceled. Richard Hoagland has new information. We're going to continue with this discussion in a moment. The cast of characters includes the man with the money, Mr. Shore, and, of course, the Egyptian government, and the curator and the caretaker of all of that ancient knowledge awaiting to be opened. And one must wonder if all of this perhaps might not boil down to Mr. Hancock, Mr. Bouval, Mr. Hoagland, and other Americans, and Germans and others are simply not going to be welcome when this ancient artifact is opened. We'll find out.
Crop circles, alien autopsies, viruses, politics, the supernatural, all this and more is covered in the Arts Bell After Dark newsletter. Every month, the latest pictures and lots of information is specially edited for listeners of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell and Dreamland. To subscribe, credit card customers call 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278. A one-year subscription, $39.95, 2 years, $74.90, and $109.85 for 3 years. Price is $5 a year higher in Canada. Call today, 1-800-917-4278.
All right, back now to Graham Hancock and Robert Bouval and Richard Hoagland. And you're all back on the air again, gentlemen. Could there be anything to what I just said? In other words, all of this that you have related thus far seems to lead me toward believing, and I'm just an outsider, that perhaps those who guard the antiquities want themselves the general credit for the opening and don't want any foreigners involved. Could that be?
Well, I mean, yes, we're beginning to sense that something of that nature is involved. Certainly with the latest development, for a senior Egyptian official who is the director general of the Giza Plateau to actually state on the air that he has come to the license of the Florida State University and Dr. Shore, and to hear otherwise from the team itself, it suggests to me that they would go to such lengths in Egypt, or at least that man, Dr. Zahi Hawass, would go to such lengths to blur and smoke screen the whole issue.
So, Robert, I think you put your finger on exactly what's going on. Let me read you a fax that's come in here. When Art and I do shows like this, you know, we basically have a country listening to us, and we have a lot of sources out there that feed us information either through the Internet, which is up live tonight, or directly through the fax machines here. Let me read you what just came in. And the individual who sent me this wants to remain anonymous, so I'm going to respect those wishes. But let me quote you from the part that I can read. The real reason I am faxing you, my sources, this individual says, in the Foreign Service, have been following your work, meaning here at Enterprise, and Hancock et al. Very intently. They tell me the story behind the cover-up is twofold. Islamic fundamentalism will possibly bring the Egyptian government down if Western influence appears to be growing, especially concerning sites which may contradict holy knowledge. That's the parallel with the extraordinary debacle going on in Israel right now. Okay?
Right.
B, this individual says, Jewish leaders also don't want any prior civilizations revealed. C, Christian leaders are the most paranoid about this. The real power structures that try to control much of the planet, knowledge, science, economics, etc., already know and or suspect what is likely in there, just as they strongly suspect that what you are saying is also right on. And I think that particular individual has encapsulated a very important aspect of this, which is we are discussing real knowledge transformation. If, as we all agree, Graham, Robert, Art, me, that whatever is found there will change the paradigm if it is honestly pursued because of good work which has been done by many people over the years to bring us to this point, then that knowledge alone, if handled in an irresponsible manner,
in some person's perceptions, I'll come back to that in a minute, could destabilize entire governments. Again, look at CNN, what's going on in Israel right as we are speaking. Now, by irresponsible handling, obviously those in power think that those out of power don't know what they're doing. So there's an extraordinary conservatism on the part of governments, on the part of, you know, people leading institutions to try to control and maintain control of knowledge, particularly knowledge which has potential for radical transformation. What I think is happening, and this is now a speculation, I think for Egyptian consumption, there are political statements being made in Egypt, even as we speak, by certain, appointed representatives, Dr. Hawass would fall into that category, that may not accord strictly with the facts as they are looked at in a broader context. In other words, Western influences, Western technology, license pieces being given and all that. And since you're dealing with a very controlled media environment at home in Egypt, these statements, by and large, will be taken at face value by the populations to which they are intended. In other words, gentlemen, we are dealing with geopolitics on an international and potentially larger level.
Richard, can I come in a minute?
Absolutely.
And I must say that I'm very pleased that we teamed up in April and May in England, because I begin to realize that we, as people are investigating this from the outside have looked upon the situation, myself with being in Egypt and trying to find out from Dr. Hawass himself and the Egyptian authorities what is going on. And thank goodness, with your contact that you've made with Dr. Shore and the Paris Said, at least to know from this end, what is the score? I have a feeling now that you're far more informed than us concerning the Shore Foundation's work there and the collaboration with the Paris Said and the Florida State. I mean, what are they hoping to find? I mean, can we tell this to our listeners? I mean, at this stage.
This is what I asked tonight. I specifically asked Boris and through him, Joe Shore, what it is that I can say regarding our conversation. And they basically gave me carte blanche to say anything I want. So let me try to, you know, work through this and bring everyone up to speed at the
very
same
good.
Time.
Yes. We're all ears here, Richard.
Well, As I told you when I talked to you after my five-hour meeting, what impressed me about Joe Shore is he was a scientist. He had yellow pads. He took copious notes. I shared a lot with him freely. In fact, I opened my conversation with him by saying, I'm not here to get anything. I am here to provide you with information that there has been a high-level, interest on the part of the United States government in what is under the plateau and in the pyramids at Egypt, and I can prove it from our NASA investigation. And I laid out for him, with the, you know, portable laptop computer that I have with me, the same kind of evidence that I have shared with you, Graham, when I sent you those FedEx packets in Washington several weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and a similar packet to you, Robert, in England several weeks ago. And that evidence was so compelling that Joe Shore immediately set in motion certain discussions involving how we can calibrate the accuracy of what is found under these rooms and in these chambers under the plateau.
Excuse me, Richard. Can you, for the sake of the audience, lay that evidence out, what you did send?
Not without a great deal of background and digression. So for the time being, the audience will just have to believe that we're all in agreement that it's pretty important. In fact, it was so interesting that I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, that you, Robert, and Graham decided to write the three-section article for the Daily Mail based in part on the evidence
that
we provided.
The article in the Daily Mail was the issue of possible signs of life in a meteorite from Mars. Indeed, and following the conferences that we had with you in the UK, in England, Richard,
I must admit that although we were rather novices on the subject at the time, I have been very, very convinced that there is a lot to investigate here, and that you've done a great service in bringing this to the attention of the public.
We're referring to your work on Mars.
But could you please carry on with this meeting with Dr. Shaw that you've had? I mean, they must in 5 hours have told you what they were looking for, and since they've given you carte blanche, please share it with us and the audience.
Well, what Dr. Shaw, admitted to me, as well as he admitted to you, that is he got very interested in all this because of the Casey prophecies and the astronomical correlations, and in fact, he would hope that if he is allowed to proceed without censorship and without fetters and in a kind of an investigation that we would all approve of, that he could potentially confirm a very ancient set of artifacts under the plateau that date back to the magical 10,500 or earlier time frame. He was very open in terms of admitting that that's what he hopes might be found, provided he goes through the proper protocols and satisfies an awful lot of political problems that have to be met when you're doing anything in Egypt.
But this is where we strike a little problem, because when we did suggest that we would inform the public of an investigation to look for chambers under the Sphinx, we were told by Dr. Shaw himself in a written fax to us that what he was doing there was to look for chasms and faults.
He said he was concerned about tourists falling through holes in the ground and felt that it was necessary to prospect for faults under the Giza Plateau. You have to remember this is a plateau with 15 million tons of pyramids on it, and we don't know of people falling through holes in the ground. But one of the things that he specifically threatened to sue us for was mentioning his connection with the Casey Foundation. So we're very, very amazed to hear what you're telling us.
Why do you think that position was taken? Is it because Dr. Zahi Awaz had put pressure on...
I think it has to do with domestic politics in Egypt and the sincere difficulty with Islamic fundamentalism and the things we're seeing going on in Israel. There is a very serious problem. And Robert, you, having lived there, know that this is not... We're not just making this up. There are officials who are concerned for their very lives if there is a perception that discoveries are coming out that contradict, as my faxing friend here says, holy knowledge and perceptions of these as they currently exist. And it's this potential for a paradigm shift of stunning proportions that I think has made everyone in the Middle East, particularly around the plateau now, extremely nervous about Western journalists, Western discussions, the idea of openness in the press, the First Amendment. And I think that Dr. Shaw, this is now a speculation, I think that he was trying to placate political forces in Egypt when he did not have...
Well, Richard, excuse me, I may obviously sound very, very naive here, but I believe that with monuments of the importance of these, which are, I repeat, a legacy for the whole of mankind, it is important for people not only to say things openly, but also to do things openly, and most important, that they don't say one thing publicly and do another thing privately. Our whole campaign has been for the public to be fully informed about this matter.
Well, let me continue with this meeting, because at the meeting, you and Robert came up, because I brought you up very forcefully and very specifically with Rory Milliken as my witness. And what
Rory Milliken is the representative of the Canadian government.
He's the Canadian government rep, yes.
He was there at the meeting.
He was at the meeting, yes.
But,
what I said was that I saw myself in the position to provide information I thought would be important for Dr. Shaw in his investigations, because of the high-level connections between this government, the American government, and Egypt that can be proven now through the NASA connection, up to and including certain NASA personnel that were pivotally important. You know, there's a key Egyptian whose name I don't really want to mention a lot tonight, who shows up first.
Well, let's share that with the public, Richard.
Well, because I don't...
I think you're referring to Farouk Elbaz, are you not?
Well, I would not have done that, Graham, but I wish...
Oh, why not?
Graham, this is my information, and I will share exactly politically what is important to move this ball down the field.
Yeah, go on, Richard, go on.
Well, now that you have mentioned his name, this individual turns out to have a very, very important lineage out of Egypt. His father was a renowned Egyptologist. He goes to university in Europe. He then shows up in the United States in the 1960s. He becomes attached to the NASA program, winds up being pivotal in the site selection of the landing sites on the moon and the landing sites of the unmanned spacecraft on Mars. He then leaves NASA and goes into the private university system. In fact, he's at Boston University, just down the hall from Robert Schoch.
I understand that he founded the remote sensing institute at Boston, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Sorry.
He then shows up in a 1987 expedition back to Egypt, ostensibly looking at the second solar boat pit with Apollo lunar NASA technology, and a couple of astronauts came with him. He then shows up, the same individual, as being placed in charge of opening the room at the end of the shaft leading out toward the southern sky and Sirius from the Queen's Chamber.
You're absolutely right. And this is where we were stunned, in that this statement was made in the Egyptian press in March of this year by Dr. Zahi Hawass himself, who, as I understand, is a very, very good and personal friend of Dr. Farouk Elbaz.
Well, Dr. Elbaz, I was able to demonstrate to Joe Shore, is a pivotal figure connecting the NASA evidence we have of its extraordinary and sustained interest in Egypt, in Egyptian mythology, in the constellations of Osiris, Orion, Sirius, Canis Major, Aldebaran, Taurus, that whole Duat region of the sky shows up not only in key NASA documentation relating to the space program, but in terms of personnel connecting Egypt and the American space program. And when I laid all this out to Joe Shore, my reason for doing it was to basically say, look, Joe, we're all playing in a sandbox where there have been lots of other people before us with much higher power and connections and agendas that we are not aware of. Be careful. And he has apparently taken that dictum to heart. And one of the things he has done is to invite me to be present. And the other thing he did at my urging was to tender an invitation to you gentlemen to have a private meeting with him. And I know that the substance of that meeting was to discuss how you can be present also when these investigations are pursued on the plateau.
I would like to state immediately in response to that, Richard, that we cannot be party to anything about which the public is not fully informed. That may be naive, it may not be geopolitical, but we think that absolute honesty and openness and public accountability are essential in this matter.
All right, gentlemen, let's hold it right there. It's obvious where we're going from there, at least it is to me. And so we'll pick up on that exact point when we come back. I'm Art Bell. This is the CBC Radio Network. Don't forget, we're going to Egypt next year. If you want to be part of it and come along, if you're on the East Coast, call 800-624-7779. Midwest, 800-633-2732. In the West, 800-848-7120. 9 a.m. Sunday or 8 a.m. Monday morning. We'll be right back.
This is Talk Radio Network.
To an encore performance of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. This program is aired live Monday through Friday from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. in the Pacific time zone and 2 a.m. to 7 a.m. in the Eastern. Please contact your local radio listing to confirm the exact times Art Bell airs live in your area. And now, Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
This is the CBC Radio Network.
It is, and this may be about, maybe all about where we started from. All of us. That's what we're talking about. What may lie between the Sphinx, beneath the Sphinx, it may have to do with our origins. It is a non-trivial issue. Discussing it, Graham Hancock, Robert Duvall in Delaware, and Richard Hoagland in Manhattan. And we'll get back to them in a moment. Select antenna is the best way to improve reception to Egypt, to the pyramids, to the Sphinx, to Jerusalem, to Haifa, to the Greek islands, to Italy, to Pompeii, to the Isle of Capri, is booking quickly, and we would love to have you come along. Come along with us. They will send you free information. You can call Sunday at beginning at 9 a.m. in the morning or Monday morning at 8 o'clock Pacific time, all times Pacific. Here are the numbers. Please make note of them, and don't delay. The bookings and the reservations are a fixed number, finite number. So you've got to act early. I urge you. Call. They'll send you free information on this incredible cruise on the MS Mazdan. If you're in the eastern part of the U.S., call 800-624-7779. 800-624-7779. Midwest, call 800-633-2732. If you're on the West Coast, including Alaska and Hawaii, call 800-848-7120. 800-848-7120. Back now to Graham Hancock, Robert Duvall in Delaware, and Richard Hoagland in Manhattan. And I believe that, Graham, you were just saying you could be not part of any expedition in which the American public was not fully informed, or the world, really.
The public of the world has to be fully informed on this matter. We see no excuse, justification, or reason for secrecy, whether on the grounds of geopolitics or any other form of politics. This is about human knowledge. It's the most sacred issue in the world. And what has been the tragedy of this site over more than the last 20 years has been the secrecy, the double standards, the dishonesty of information that has been presented to the public by many different parties concerned with the Giza Necropolis. And what Robert and I are trying to do is to shed some honest light on this matter and bring the facts before the public. And therefore, we can't be part of anything which does not involve that.
And I'm sure Richard is still here.
I'm here, yes, of course.
Yes,
I'm here.
But, and hence the reason why we sided with you in London and Leeds, Richard, is very much your long-standing campaign to have the matter concerning the Sidonia Enigma, the Mars monument issue, brought to the public in an open way. We believe that you and us stand for the same thing. And at this stage, I think that we hope that you support this openness.
Well, I do see that.
I'm very, very pleased that you have discussed Blanche's statement by Joe Shore to let us know what went on.
Let me
carry on with 5 hours.
Point.
You must have discussed.
Right.
I mean,
let me make a couple of points
about it.
One of the things that I was apprehensive of concerning conversations that you and I had in England is that there would be some kind of documents that I would be asked to sign or agreements I would be asked to make that would curtail the freedom of inquiry, Graham, that I totally concur should be a part of any investigation of something of this nature. And I am very pleased to report tonight that there have been absolutely zero conditions attached to my involvement, participation, witnessing, presence, broadcasting live from the plateau of whatever I see, or in terms of discussions and looking at evidence prior to the actual opening that we are supposed to be, you know, involved in at some level prior to my going or what I do when I get there. And if there had any conditions, if I have been asked to sign documents, for instance, not acknowledging that, you know, I've been a strong supporter of John Anthony West. I extraordinarily acknowledge that his historical perspective and all this and his place in history for having had the tenacity for 15 years to pursue the truth that ultimately wound up with real serious geological redating of the Sphinx itself with the assistance of Bob Schock and others. And if I've been asked to sign a document, you know, claiming that I don't know John, I obviously wouldn't have signed it.
All right, Richard, I asked Graham and Robert about John Anthony West, why he was given the big boot. Now let me ask you, why?
Well, I have some personal knowledge here, and I don't want to tell tales out of school, so I'm going to frame my words very carefully. And Graham, please allow me to frame my own words, okay? John is...
I can't frame your words for you, Richard.
Thank you, thank you. John, we all know that John is...
frame our thoughts for us. You just frame your words, Richard.
Has anyone here heard of a hair shirt? Do you know what a hair shirt is?
Just make, you're going to make an opinion. Please state it.
Well, John tends to rub people the wrong way sometimes. He is extremely direct, sometimes to the point of being overly direct, and at times he is extraordinarily undiplomatic.
Well,
and I know from personal knowledge
the trait that we actually like about
John.
Yeah,
we really admire that in John, the openness and the honesty and the fearlessness in defending principle and truth.
Well, but in this case, what John did was not defend principle and truth. He took a very direct personal shot at Zahi Hawass when Dr. Hawass was down. And without going into great detail, Zahi Hawass, because of this, developed an extraordinary personal animosity. This is at the level of a food fight at you know, some level between John West and Zahi Hawass.
Personalities.
Personality. Extraordinary personality problems occasioned because of both individuals who are very strong-willed, and you know them both, right, gentlemen?
Yeah.
The fact is that when that Rubicon was crossed, when John West, for whatever reason, and I know, Robert, you urged him not to do that, you counseled him to be far more diplomatic, when he took those steps, he basically, cut himself off by his own choice and own action. Because the reaction on the other side, where opinions and attitudes and emotions are very strongly held in the Middle East, was violent and flung back in his face, so to speak.
What I urged him not to do was to take a position that would cause a confrontation with Joe Shaw at the time. But John,
well, he took on Joe Shaw after this personal thing with Zahi Hawass. The point is that, you know, I cannot agree with what John did, but I can totally support his investigation, his right to history, and his right to be acknowledged as a leader in opening this whole situation so that
Richard, can I just say this? I mean, what you said about Dr. Hawass's attitude to John West is absolutely correct. But he's not the only one who has suffered from this almost paranoid attitude that Hawass has demonstrated concerning all these affairs. We've had the same thing with the German robotic engineer Rudolf Ganterbrink, who has been very much abused by Dr. Hawass in certain statements.
Well, see, I don't know Ganterbrink. I do know John. John
West was not the only one who was involved with the Sphinx project that took place in 1990. There's been heavy abuse on the credibility of Robert Schock, for example. So John West, in a sense, is one of the persons who has suffered from the virulent attacks from Hawass, and now we find ourselves in the same boat.
Frankly, these personal games and animosities are not something that anybody should pander to. I think it's important to come back to the basic issue that we're dealing with monuments of extraordinary importance, which should not be subjected to such petty and vile behavior on the part of the authorities responsible for them.
I totally agree, Graham, and unfortunately we're dealing with human beings and they sometimes don't live up to their higher principles and aspirations.
You're then arguing for real politic on this, are you?
No, what I'm arguing for is I, for some reason, and I am quite mesmerized by this, have been tendered an invitation to be present
when something important may go down.
Well, if that accords with your conscience and your feeling that it is good, then we suggest that you should go. But personally, I will not go under those circumstances.
Well, but if the circumstances are there are no fetters.
But I have been able to clarify why Zahi Hawass is making public statements that this entire project does not exist anymore, whereas Joseph Shore, according to you, is making statements to you which you have been given carte blanche to broadcast that it is going ahead. This is a very bizarre contradiction, one of many contradictions surrounding these monuments which make it impossible for the public to know exactly what's going on.
Well, but the way they're going to know is if one of us or two of us or all of us are there to report.
Well, I think that it should not be a matter for us, actually. It should be a matter for the world media to be present. I don't think Richard Hoagland is actually enough here. I think that we need the entire media of the world present every instant of this opening, and nothing less will do.
Well, I think that there are...
I think you should insist on that, actually, Richard, since you think you have so much influence with Joe Shore.
Say again?
I think you should insist on the media of the world being present.
Well, I think the media are going to be present.
I mean, I must say
that this contradicts a statement that of another interview that was given by Zahi Hawass to an American network, an American TV independent company. He was interviewed by
Dave Bell
interviewed him. And he actually said, Dr. Hawass actually said that he will not allow journalists at the Giza Plateau.
In fact, he said he won't allow journalists even into the pyramids, never mind under the Sphinx.
So what's going on, Richard? I tend to believe that what Joseph Shore is saying is utterly correct. I'm very pleased that he has come out and has expounded to you his intentions, and he's decided to be totally open about this matter. We commend this, and we're fully behind it. What we are still puzzled is the contradiction of information at the most stunning and extraordinary level coming from Dr. Zahi Hawass himself on this matter. But can I return to this meeting that you've had with Dr. Shore?
I have to say this. It's very important that people understand this, and I want to say this very, very strongly. This cannot be a private party at the Sphinx. This is a public affair, and it must involve the world media to the fullest extent possible. Richard Hoagland alone cannot represent the world public on this issue.
Well, Graham, I'm a little puzzled because you say I can't represent it alone, and I'm saying that Dr. Shore wants you to be there, and you say you can't be there.
I will be very happy to be there as long as the world media is present. I don't want to play any part in a private party.
All right, let's find out how much media is invited. Richard, you alluded to me earlier in the day, alluded to the fact that somebody representing the Fox network, perhaps.
Well, there are several networks which are, in negotiation.
Okay. So
I can represent that. So let me say very specifically that Boris Said asked me tonight to have you call him, all right, at home to discuss your presence, Art Bell, on the plateau, representing the audience that's listening to us across America tonight.
All right, so I'm so...
What I am seeing... Let me interrupt.
I'm so...
What I am seeing here is a pattern
Richard, I'm some media, and I'd be very pleased to be there. And we have a very good audience, but it is radio, and there needs to be more media there. Television, print journalists, and I think that's...
It's important to understand that the invitation does have to come from the Egyptian government. Joe Shore or Boris Said, I'm afraid, are not in position to make invitations on behalf of the government of Egypt.
But they can intercede and represent in terms of good offices that individuals, media representatives, institutions, and all that...
Richard, Robert Bovan here. Can we be a bit more specific as to what exactly this invitation entails? You are invited, or whoever is invited, to observe what exactly? What do you know about it?
Well, let me dig out my copy of the facts here. It says, and I will quote. Let me see. Where are we here? Okay. This is happy to confirm our invitation to join us on the plateau during the last week in October, the first week of November 96, when we hope to be opening the first of the underground chambers which the Shore Expedition has discovered beneath the limestone of the Giza Plateau. Then he goes on and he says, as discussed, we expect to be doing further exploration in the area during the course of the winter, and we'll keep you advised of dates in case you wish to be present at future digs.
Well,
so the specifics there are that they are planning, I believe, to open a tunnel that leads to one of these rooms. And you're right, Graham, there's more than one room. And this has been found through ground-penetrating radar and other technologies that have already been brought to bear on the site, as I understand it.
This is very exciting news, to say the least. But we're a bit puzzled about how this information is coming to the public, and indeed to us at this precise moment.
Well, there's no magic here. You know, when I met with Shore, the one thing I said was, we've all got to be in the conversation. I want you to meet with Graham Hancock and Robert Bivol. I would
you
like
did not have my authority
present.
To make that statement on my behalf, Richard.
Well, isn't that a matter of fact, I can have an opinion. I'd like you to be there, can I? You don't have to say yes. But the fact is that because of your work, because of Robert's work, because of my work, and there are a lot of other people I'd like to see there too, all right? But in terms of the specific information I was able to show Dr. Shore connecting NASA and Giza that comes from Robert's work and your work, that's why I mentioned you two gentlemen. People I would like to see there as well.
Richard, can we get an understanding, because you're the man who's been in that five-hour meeting with Dr. Shore in the recent week.
Mm-hmm.
Can we get a clear understanding as to what exactly is the project about? What was the project about in the first place? Because this is what we're all very confused about. Let me tell you why. When the license was granted, when we heard that the license was granted and we wanted to report the matter to the public, we sent a telefax to the president of the Antiquities Department, who incidentally has been fired last week, I don't know if you've heard.
Nur al-Din, yeah. Someone actually faxed me and asked me to ask you if you have any information on that.
Well, it's official. He's been fired, and we're a bit puzzled about it. But
no, it's true. I also confirm that. I've got that information here.
Right. Do we know why he was fired?
No. Let me just make that point. At the time when the license was granted in April 96, April of this year, we sent a fax to Dr. Nuruddin because we couldn't get any straight answers, any confirmation of what the team was going to do, what the license entailed. So we inquired directly with the president of the Antiquities, Dr. Nuruddin. And this fax said that we understand that from the meetings we had with Dr. Shore in 94, that there's going to be an attempt to locate a chamber. Indeed, we had been sent a short film by Boris Said that was shot a couple of months before, showing Dr. Zahia was entering a tunnel under the Sphinx and stating that they will open that tunnel soon. Reference was made to the Casey predictions at the time in this promotional film. Now, we didn't get a response from Dr. Nuruddin. Instead, we got this famous letter that we said before from Dr. Shore threatening us not to reveal this information, and that if we did, we'd be taken to court. However, what we've heard since is Dr. Zahia was coming out a few days later making announcements that indeed tunnels would be opened under the Sphinx without mentioning any connection to Dr. Shore. And as far as the Florida State University is concerned, they've been making statements publicly on the Internet stating that their motives to go there was to investigate the controversy over the weathering of the Sphinx, which was started, of course, with John Anthony West and Robert Shock. Whereas from the official statement by Joseph Shore to us was that nothing of the sort was happening at all, that his project was merely to look for faults and chasm for the protection of the personnel on the site. So in this state of total confusion, could you please clarify what exactly the project was about? What did Shore say to you that can shed light to us and to our listeners?
All right, that's a good, clear question, Richard.
Well, he said two things. One is that his interest in what's under Giza was sparked or spurred or initiated by his interest in the predictions of Edgar Cayce. All right, that was very clear. And two, that his expertise as a chemist and his funding through the Shore Foundation of the current Florida State investigations was looking for evidence that may in fact confirm at some point those Cayce predictions, and it was clearly archaeological, and that as far as he was concerned, the main impediment was that there were a large number of rules and protocols to be followed, set down by the Antiquities Organization and people like Zai Hawass, and he was doing his best to follow the precepts as they were given to him so that he, in fact, could conduct very extensive investigations on site.
Richard, hold it right there. Everybody hold it. We'll come back and we'll clarify all this after the top of the hour news. This is the American CBC Radio Network.
This is the CBC Radio Network.